The next stage of acceptance is the movement into, in fact, recognizing that there are cultural differences. And this moves through the respect for cultural and for behavioral and value differences. The implications of this kind of acceptance are that we are accepting the viability or the equal organization of different cultures. By equal organization, I don't mean that they're the same. I mean that they are organized in equally complex ways. And in so doing, we recognize that we are equally sophisticated, but in different ways. In this sense, I now accept the existence of difference. This does not mean that I agree with everything. I may not like one group more than another. I may not like one culture more than another. It doesn't mean we like everything. It just means that we accept that it's different. The implication for an individual is that information is organized into a specific cultural context. This is when I'm able to say, I am operating in a context here. We tend to be curious about cultural differences. We seek knowledge about other cultures, and we tend to be paralyzed from exercising power. The newfound discovery of cultural difference sometimes causes a kind of ethical multiplicity, you know, where we say, well, whatever, you know, there's that way of doing it and that way of doing it and that way of doing it. And so there is a kind of danger at this stage of not being able to maintain a good ethical commitment. That danger is in some ways addressed in the next stage. Organizations at this level here have a tendency to talk the talk but not walk the walk, as we say, you know, meaning that they are able to say, here's what's important about cultural difference, but they don't necessarily know what to do to act on that knowledge. This moves us to the next stage of adaptation. Adaptation now is the key to exercising intercultural competence. It is the point at which we are able to take the perspective of another group, I call it cognitive frame shifting, and to engage in behavioral code shifting. The difference between the two is that the cognitive frame shifting is my ability to take your perspective. Not to put myself in your position, but to take your perspective. And this is a rather different thing. What's your name? Yes.
My name is Robert.
Robert?
Yes.
Robert. Okay. Say I'd like to find out how Robert is feeling about this talk so far today. All right. Now, a typical way that I might do this would be to put myself in his position. So I can do that. You know, walk a mile in the other man's moccasins, you know. How would you feel if you were in his position? So I can do that. How would I feel if I were in his position? So I imaginatively put myself in his chair, and I look back, and I say, brilliant. Yeah, that's really good, you know. Okay. Now, am I finding out how Robert is feeling? Well, maybe. But under what condition would that work pretty well? My putting myself in his position, in what condition would that work pretty well?
If he's similar,
that's right. If he's actually similar to me, that is, if we're from the same culture or the same group, maybe that might work. But the more different he is, the more he's from another culture, the more difference we have, the less likely it's going to work for me to put myself in his position, because I'm finding out about me, not about him. So the more cultural difference we're dealing with, the more important it is to make the cognitive frame shift so that I'm looking not from Robert's position, but from Robert's perspective. I'm trying to, and what do I need to know to look from Robert's perspective? I don't just need to know what it feels like to be sitting in his chair. I need to know something about Robert. Something about Robert's culture, something about being able to, what is the world, how is Robert organizing the world? That's what I need to know to be able to say, how is he feeling about this talk so far? The psychologists and the multicultural counselors call this empathy. Yeah, empathy, being able to take the perspective is basically well developed in the therapy field, but not so common outside of the therapy field, this idea. Yeah, but this is central to this stage of development here. All right, then once I'm able to take his perspective, then I'm able to behave in ways that may be more transparent or more effective in Robert's culture. Okay, by transparent, it means that it doesn't call attention to itself. By effective, it means that I'm able to do things with Robert that, you know, we, where he recognizes, he gives me credibility, he thinks that, okay, he's acting in a fine way, and I'm able to then behave in, you know, appropriate ways. Now, that doesn't happen naturally. I have to have that behavior as part of my repertoire of behavior. So, for instance, if you go to Japan, there are two things you need to do. One of them is you need to look at the world in a more Japanese way. How are you going to do that? Well, you need to know something about Japan, and you need to have spent some time talking to Japanese people and organizing the world, trying to organize the world in a more Japanese way. And that now you would like to behave in a more appropriate way in Japan. Does that just happen naturally? Well, no. You have to have as part of your repertoire of behavior the ability to close down your nonverbal behavior, the ability to maintain silence for long periods of time. Not so difficult for Finnish people, but, you know, I mean, certainly difficult for Americans, I have to say, you know. And few Americans, few, have in their repertoire of behavior comfort with silence. But that's a necessary part of your repertoire if you're going to be able to behave appropriately in Japan. But now, are Japanese people always silent? Well, of course not. You know, Japanese people are frequently, you know, very talkative with one another. So how do you know when to be silent or when to be talkative? That comes from having a feeling for the situation, from organizing the world in a more Japanese way. And when you do that, you can feel when you ought to be silent and when you ought to be talkative. And then you have to know, as part of your repertoire of behavior, what it's like to be silent. That's the way it works. Doesn't mean you become Japanese. One doesn't. One doesn't become Ghanaian. One doesn't become Japanese. You know, you don't become an American. But our behavior becomes more transparent, becomes more competent in the other culture as a result of being able to do this. Note, however, that you can't do this until you accept that there are cultural differences. You can't accept that there are cultural differences until you see the common humanity of people. You can't see the common humanity of people until you've differentiated them through defense, and that means you have to have gotten out of denial. So in other words, you can't just start here. This is the whole developmental idea, is that you need to wait until you're down the line before you come to this. Okay? So, we're more conscious of our frame shifting, we're more mindful regarding cultural issues, we're able to intentionally code shift. That means that we're able to say, I'm now going to look at the world in a more Finnish way, or a more Norwegian way, or a more Japanese way. And the exercise of power now becomes more appropriate in its cultural context. Organizations at this point are able to say, we need to have competence as part of our overall organization, and executives and managers tend to define their role in those terms. There's generally a lot of attention, sort of the opposite of the situation you were in when people are operating, when this is the predominant stage in an organization. Let me briefly mention this last stage. This is not something that's part of our measurement for the most part, but we are able to measure part of this, which is the integration stage. This is the stage at which people may begin to define identity as part of, or define difference as part of their identity. There are two forms. We call it encapsulated and constructive. Typically, this condition begins with people who are bicultural, and that may describe some of you in this room, people who are able to shift easily back and forth between two cultures, culture A, culture B. And a lot of people exercise or are able to operate for, you know, just fine and be bicultural. But sometimes the two cultures clash with one another, that when you're around A people, they say you're really B. And when you're around the B people, they say, you know, they say, well, you're really an A, for instance. You know, and these, they come into clash. We call it internal culture shock. When that happens, it may force your identity to the margins of these cultures. That is, that you find yourself in between cultures, neither A nor B. Two conditions of that. One of them is that you may find yourself stuck there. We call it encapsulated. You're stuck between cultures. The feeling here is of being alienated, of a sense of anomie, a lot of self-absorption, difficulty making decisions. You ask everybody around you, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? You know, enough about me. Who do you think I am? You us. You know, this is, there's a lot of this of this concern with self. On the other hand, you have the constructive marginality, which is the ability to shift from this position here in the middle in and out of cultures. You become more of a bridge person, somebody who's able to move between cultures fairly easily. And in this movement, you become constructive. You are constructing your identity in that sense. This position here has implications of being the generator of knowledge, that you yourself are creating knowledge. There's some possibility of identity confusion, but otherwise you're feeling fairly authentic about this position of being a bridge builder. These people have a lot of potential for working in intercultural situations. That said, I would say that typically this is a pretty good position to be working for. This is a position of competence, adaptation, even though we can look at the integration parts as well.